this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
I'm Bob Love of the Chicago Bulls, and you listen to Freddie.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. We have the great Keith Franz on the line at Bull Scripted. How you doing, my man?
Chilling like a villain.
Keith, I've been dying to talk to you. It's been far too long since we got together. There's a player that has started to capture the imagination of Bulls fans everywhere if the unthinkable happens and we finish outside of the top four. And the first time I saw him mentioned was, I think, on your Twitter feed. One Darius Garland. Make the case for a young Darius Garland from Vanderbilt, 6'2", 175.
He's the epitome of what the NBA is going to. He has parking lot range. He has the best handles in this draft. So those are the two key things that Steph Curry has kind of, you know, revolutionized in the game, and that's being creative ball handler that can create space for yourself and your teammates, and you create all the space in the world when you can shoot from the half court line. So he is just the epitome of what the league is going to in terms of fit and need. I think he is possibly even the best pick for the Bulls. Obviously Zion supersedes all that, but he's a good catch and shoot player. So when Zach is on ball, you can't leave Garland alone in the corner. He is the ultimate spacer. His playmaking is questionable, but if you watch a lot of his high school film from Brentwood, you can see the creativity and the willingness to pass. And I would be ecstatic if the Bulls ended up with Garland.
Just for anyone who's not aware, he only played four games this season. They played USC, Liberty, both those teams. Liberty's a decent team. I can't remember the other two they played. Nobody great. And he definitely shot the ball well. I mean, his stats were, he was well over 50% from the field, well over 40% from three. The guy's got major league range, you know, but defensively, it's problematic. When I see that height and weight, well, when I see the weight, I think Trae Young, help me, does he have a bigger upside on the defensive side of the ball than I'm giving him credit for? Or is that going to be problematic? Because it didn't look good to me on the limited amount of tape I saw.
I mean, it's going to be somewhat problematic. He's the report, or whatever you want to call it, the scouting report that Draft Express put out actually has his measurements almost identical to Curry at 6'3", 180. Not skill, just the
size.
Frame, the size. Is what they have in their reports, whether that's true or not. Maybe we find out come combine time, but he's also a member of Clutch Sports, the Bronze Agency, so he might not go to the combine.
Well, he'd go there to get measured, right? I mean, that would
be... No, Hutch completely bypassed that last year when the Bulls gave him a promise, so if the Lakers are trying to maybe get Garland, I don't know, maybe he won't talk to anybody but the Lakers. That's the kind of stuff that, you know, happens around draft time, so... that should be interesting. I do have a feeling he might be selective with his workouts.
Man, I love his shooting. I really do. And that's something that is, you're always going to find a spot in the NBA. You know, look at Doug McDermott still playing in the league because he can shoot. And this guy has elite, it looks like elite shooting skills. But, you know, just I am a little concerned with the potential of pairing him with Zach LaVine in the backcourt. That could, you know, be disastrous defensively. All the more reason to keep Dunn, I think, as either a backup or someone that could either may possibly start next year and have Garland come off the bench if that's our draft pick. But I'm going to run through a couple of the top draft names. And as Garland's pretty much, you're the first guy I saw who was really in support of him. I'm going to ask you, who would you go with, Garland or this player? Okay? Garland, Ja Morant.
Ja is undersized too. His shooting,
more athletic though. I would say in the video I've seen, I think Ja Morant's more athletic, and I would also say he's a better passer. That's the part about
those are his two major upsides. I don't know. I have concerns about him and LaVine defensively as well. If Zach wasn't in the equation, I think Ja Morant is the pick. But I'm more of a Zach LaVine fan than most people. Is Ja Morant a better athlete than Zach LaVine? Maybe
not.
He's probably just a better playmaker. So, I don't know. I think if you draft Ja Morant, I think you're looking to trade Zach LaVine in the very near future.
Wow. Why do you feel that way? I think, you know, what I've seen in Morant, he's an excellent passer. I think he'd be an excellent facilitator, and I think guys like LaVine would benefit from his ability to pass the ball. Why don't you like him next to LaVine? Outside of the defense, I'm talking about the offensive end.
The offensive end, Zach needs the ball. Zach isn't a catch-and-shoot player. He's capable,
yeah,
but he doesn't do that. He's a catch-and-reset player. He's an ISO player. He needs the ball to create for him and his teammates. I don't see Zach wanting to be just a catch-and-shoot guy. He wants to have the ball. He wants to be the one doing the stuff, and I think Ja Morant takes that completely out of the equation. Well, he's a great passer. There's no doubt about it, but I think if you draft Ja Morant, that you're committing to Ja Morant and probably moving on from LaVine.
So you're saying that Morant would be the primary ball handler, LaVine would be more relegated to a catch-and-shoot role. That's your concern, because Morant can't really be in that role, whereas Garland could.
Exactly. Garland is effective on and off the ball and has limitless range. I think you're going to run into similar problems with Ja Morant that you run into with Chris Dunn. They're going to sag off him in the corner. They're not going to respect his range. And then you're back in square one without the defense. So
yeah, but
I like Ja. Without LaVine, Ja to me is the second pick in this draft. With LaVine in mind, I like Garland's fit.
Let's hold on 1 second. So we got LaVine shooting 37%, a good three-point shooter. You got Otto Porter, a very, very good three-point shooter. Larry Markkanen, a good three-point shooter with, to me, elite potential. That's the one area of his game where he hasn't really, I think, lived up to his potential yet, in my opinion. But those three guys next to Ja Morant, I think there's potential for those three to really work on the offensive end. But you're
saying,
what
was your concern with Garland? Defense. Do you have the same issue with Ja Morant? He's,
I think he's
6'2".
Got a higher, yeah.
He's 6'2", 6'3", 170 pounds.
Yeah, well, I think to me, Morant is definitely, to me, looks a little bit taller.
But you also watched him play in the OVC where everybody else is shorter. He's not playing against guys that are 6'4", 6'5", very consistently. I watched ESPN. I paid for ESPN Plus, actually. I didn't even just cheat with the free trials over and over again to watch Ja since, like, November. I like Ja. And trust me, if you put Wendell Carter Jr. For Colbert, who was his center, he was kind of smooth for his size, but he didn't look like he belonged on a college basketball floor. I get what everybody's talking about, but campaign did great in the OVC, too. There's just a lot of concerns there for me. I don't know.
Okay. I will not be sad if we get Ja Morant. I'll just put
I won't be sad either.
I think it's going to be a fun experiment.
The first time that me and you talked about him, I cautiously said the words Iverson, because he does have that kind of, like, mindset, and I do like him, but with LaVine, like I said, I feel you're committing to a move in the near future.
I guess, just to me, Morant does have a higher defensive ceiling. This is what I was basically trying to get at than, you know, overall.
Than Garland. Relying on the same thing that you're expecting out of Zach LaVine, that his athleticism is going to mean that he's a great defender, when that doesn't always turn out to be the case.
Fair enough. R.J. Barrett versus
I'd take R.J. over Garland.
So would I. I think it's been a little unfair how much Barrett has been maligned. I think it's just because of the uber love for Williamson that, you know, they kind of view Barrett as a guy who's kind of maybe hogged it a bit too much and didn't give it up enough. But I saw some incredible flashes from Barrett for a kid so young. And just so big, and just his ability to pass, I think, is very underrated.
I think he's a very good passer. I think his athleticism is better than a lot of people want to give him credit for. His free throw shooting is what scares me more than anything. He's shown the ability to hit step back threes, step back mid-range. His offensive game is pretty advanced, and I think he is a better two-way player than Ja Morant or Darius Garland, and I think Barrett is still two on my board behind Zion.
Interesting. Kobe White.
Kobe was another player that I kind of started watching earlier in the college season, and he was ranked in around the 20s in the second round, and you knew that he was going to start shooting up boards. His fit with LaVine, keeping Zach in mind, and I know a lot of people really could care less if Zach's here for the future or not, but I think Kobe might actually be the best fit with Zach because he can play on and off ball. He's kind of a combo guard, and he pushes the pace, and he has the most size of the three guards. But I do like the potential of Garland and Morant better.
He's a distant third to me behind Morant and Garland. I'm not as impressed as everyone else is. He's got very good athleticism. He's got some height as a 6'5 guard, not a ton of weight. I'm just not in love with the guy at all. But I would not be upset if we ended up with him, but he's, to me, the distant third out of those three guards. DeAndre Hunter. You're not a believer yet?
I have to exhale a little bit here because why do you pick the oldest wing player on the championship team every year? I feel that we're going down the same road here. He showed up big time between him and Culver. I don't know. I'm not as high on Culver as everybody else. A shooting guard who can't shoot isn't much of a shooting guard to me. I like Hunter, but he's like worst case scenario for me if we fall to eighth.
I think he's got kind of Pascal Siakam type of ability eventually. I think that's what he could be. I think he's the most underrated player in the draft. His shooting metrics were off the scale this year. The only thing he doesn't, to me, do really well is handle the ball, you know, but it's not something that's a strength for him. But as far as playing D, shooting the three, exactly what you need in today's NBA, a guy who can guard multiple positions. You don't have to worry off a pick and roll. He can guard multiple positions.
What position do you think he plays?
I think in a modern-day NBA, he's probably a four. He's 225. I think he's going to probably max out between 230 and 234. He's just like, I see a lot of Pascal Siakam in him. I think that's what he'll eventually be. Maybe even a better shooter than Siakam. He's already pretty good at shooting the ball. But he'll go interchangeably between the three and the four. I mean, he's far better equipped to play the four than Hutch was, right? But just because he's so much heavier and so he's just built so much better. I mean, he's a legit 225. I can't stress this enough, like the difference between 225 pounds of pure muscle as opposed to 195. It's massive when you don't realize it until you actually play against somebody who's a legit 225 versus 195 or even 250. You know, like the case I made with Wendell Carter Jr. But as far as right now, all I can see is basically people are discounting him because of his age. But again, I point to Siakam. I mean, we discounted Siakam because of his age when he came out in the draft. So he was about the similar age, maybe a little bit older. I can't remember how old Siakam was.
I understand you're not in love with him. That we endured this treacherous season to draft Lauri Markkanen's longtime backup. Who might play the three once Otto's gone.
He could absolutely play the three. He's one of those guys. Come on.
I agree. Fred, I get where you're coming from, but given what we went through this year, if we fall to 7 or 8, the Bulls better find a way to trade up and get who they want. We cannot be settling for DeAndre Hunter.
I don't think it's settling.
But he's going to be average.
All right, Jared Cole, that is so wrong. I'm not even going to begin to go into this. I don't want to get into
Bob round two.
I don't want to go down to Bob. I mean, I've already proven right on that one. I got to admit, like I've been on a roll as far as like identifying potentially really good players. How long have I been talking about Pat Beverly? Like probably since December. And now everybody's coming on board on this. Like he's a perfect guy to bring in here. DeAndre Hunter, I will not at all. I will be the only guy not rolled up in a ball crying because I think he's going to be like a perfect fit for what we want, which is a rotation of guys that can be interchangeable from the two to the four to the five.
And I'll give you one thing. At least he's not Mantis Stringbean this time, but he's still the same kind of robotic 3 and D.
Don't say Tony Snell. Is that what you were going in?
No, oh I'm God. Talking about your boy Mikal Bridges last year.
Mikal Bridges. I was exactly right about Mikal Bridges.
But he still has the same limited upside because he's robotic and not fluid and doesn't handle the ball very well.
Oh. Mikal Bridges got votes from in that NBA player poll for one of the best defenders in the league, and he absolutely is by every advanced analytic that everybody
And so
hammered.
Did Chris Dunn, and Chicago wants to ship him out in a
I don't. I love Chris Dunn.
I don't either.
But I'm on Chris Dunn Island. At worst, he should be our backup point guard. That's what I still say. I don't understand. At least we see eye to eye in this. Let's take a tangent here. Let me hear your opinion on Chris Dunn and Chris Dunn Island. I don't think we've talked about it.
I think you just need to separate Zach and Chris. Zach is too ball dominant, and he did prove that he probably should have the ball on the offensive end more than Chris Dunn, but Chris isn't good at standing in a corner like Archie. It just doesn't work.
Well, Archie isn't great at it.
Chris's
either.
Usage dropped from over 25% down to 20% this year. His shots were down for a period of time. He was actually playing more efficient on the offensive end with more assists and less turnovers, but most of that was kind of when Zach was in and out with his ankle injury. The Bulls were actually 3-3 with Dunn and Archie. I think that's still the best record of the 27 different starting lineups that they ran this year. So I think Chris gets an unfair rap because he's kind of like Westbrook some nights. He just either shoots all bricks or he hits everything, and you kind of got
to
live with it.
He's a major difference maker defensively. And I'm just confused as to why some players, their defense is completely ignored. Other players who aren't good defensively but good offensively are completely – it's just such a joke how we look selectively to players in this town. It's bizarre to me. But I want Chris Dunn on this team next year. And as I said before, even if we bring in Patrick Beverley, let them compete for the starting position. You know, either one of those guys coming off the bench is a significant upgrade than what we had to endure this year. I like Shaq Harrison, but he can't shoot worth a lick. And he's fine as your number three guard. Even, you know, Ryan is fine as your number three. But as I've said all year, those guys are 11 to 15 on the roster, and they need to remain there. Jared Culver. Well, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, hang on. More on that. You mentioned Beverly, and I had somebody ask me, well, yeah, you advocate for Garland a lot. What happens if the Bulls draft Garland and sign Beverly? Then what happens to Chris Dunn? And I said, okay, well, look at this. A four-guard rotation. Patrick Beverly can play the one or the two. Defensively, you can in the NBA in this era, as long as you can defend that position, you can play there. Yeah. So Dunn and Beverly can play together.
Yeah.
Dunn and Garland can play together. You really just have to keep Dunn and LaVine away from each other in that guard rotation. Outside of that, Beverly fits with everybody, Garland fits with everybody. And I don't think you'd have a problem there. So
I love
it. I don't know why everyone's so eager to get rid of Chris Dunn.
No, I agree 100%. Chris Dunn can play the two seamlessly, especially defensively. He can pick up any two in the league. So it'd be foolish because you're not going to get anything for him. So
Culver.
Yeah, Culver. What do you think about everyone waxing poetic about him? I mean, I was open to it. His shooting metrics were horrendous for the season. You know, I know he had some nice moments, but I wasn't really impressed. I'm not going to pretend like I watched a lot of him in the regular season, but I thought he was awful in the NCAA tournament for the most part.
The last four games, I forgot I was tweeting out the stat, but it was abysmal what he was shooting. It was maybe even sub 30% for the last four games of the tournament. It was a miracle that their team even made it on the backs of Mooney. But I'm not as high on Culver. He's a good two-way prospect, but I've seen people suggesting taking him over RJ Barrett, which just blew my mind. I mean, they have similar flaws, but RJ Barrett's 18 years old, so I don't know. For me, I wouldn't even take him over.
You wouldn't take him over who?
Cam Reddish.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Now, I kind of agree with, you know, Cam Reddish had a terrible year for the most part, but I still am somewhat intrigued by him. I know this is laughable. If we end up with Cam Reddish, I mean, people are going to be jumping, you know, off the Bulls' big red bus.
I think he's going to be the steal of the draft.
Really?
Him and Nasir Little are both going to be late back end of the lottery steals that are going to surprise people.
Anyone else in the draft that we haven't mentioned who's not predicted to go in the lottery that you like? You know, like a Brandon Clark is a guy who impressed me sometimes this year. I know he's a little older prospect. Is there anybody else on the that you really like that maybe isn't predicted to go in the lottery?
If we end up taking a wing, I'm kind of crossing my fingers that Carson Edwards is back there for our second-round pick. That would be intriguing. He's probably a little undersized for the NBA, but the NBA's moved so offensive-oriented. Trae Young's the worst defender by everybody's favorite RPM metric by like a full 0.5 of a point than the next worst person in the NBA,
yeah.
And everybody waxes poetic about him. So I think the league is moving to a place where as long as you can put the ball in the hole, it doesn't matter if you're 5'6". If you can shoot from, you know, 30-plus feet out, you probably have a spot on somebody's roster. And Carson Edwards from Purdue showed quite a bit of that in the tournament.
I loved him. Oh, my God. If we could end up with him in the second round with one of our early picks, I would be ecstatic. And, yeah, I think that would be a steal to get him. So I'm on board 100% with Carson Edwards. Nasir Little, you mentioned him. You know, a guy who, I got to be honest, did not impress me in any game I saw him play this year. What was his deal? Why was he such a disappointment? And why are you so high in him going in the draft?
Well, he was the McDonald's MVP, playing against Zion and others. He went to a prestigious school where he played behind Cam Johnson, who's another player who was going to make it to the second round. He ain't going to make it there now because he's a 45% three-point shooter.
Love him. Yep.
So he went to a team with a whole bunch of upperclassmen. And because of the coach that Roy Williams is, he wasn't just going to hand him the keys to the car and go, hey, you're this great one-and-done prospect. Go lead us to the promised land. Nasir Little had to learn how to play the game. He's a freak athlete, and his measurements, I would not be surprised to see his measurements at the combine be something like Kawhi's. From his hands to his vertical to his wingspan to everything, he's just an athletic freak, and I think it comes down to opportunity, but I do think that the humbling experience of being at UNC and having to take a backseat is going to be beneficial for him as well.
Yeah. Well, as we get closer to draft, we're going to hear a lot more on these discussions. Obviously, it's a big one for the Beloved Bull, and I think it's going to be hard for them to go wrong. Whoever we add is going to be beneficial, even if it is DeAndre Hunter, contrary to your take, your statements. I'd be ecstatic.
He's gonna be solid, Fred, but we didn't endure this season for solid. Swing and miss.
We endured this season because we had tons of injuries. That's why we had a deal. We had six basic major rotation injuries to players in the rotation. So,
we invested $20 million into Jabari Parker,
which turned into Otto Porter Jr., and we're ready to rock.
Which
and roll.
That aspect is great. Like I said, I thought we were buying our draft pick when we made that signing anyway, and I like where we ended up. So
exactly. So it all turned out great. Let's not go down that rabbit hole. All right, man. It's all starting. The draft getting ready. I'll be able to keep you off the edge of the cliff if we end up with DeAndre Hunter, a future All-Star.
I'm going to be pushing you off the cliff. DeAndre Hunter.
I love DH. I love him. All right, man. Take it easy, brother. Always good talking to you, Keith. All right, man. Bye-bye.